Chaf Amar Aleph, we're up to the Mishnah in the middle of the page. So the Mishnah says, Ein me'idin ela al parts of panim imachotem, afal pi sheyesh simanin begufo uvcheilav. So the Mishnah says that when it comes to identifying and testifying about whether a man died in order to permit his wife to remarry, you need to be able to see the entirety of his face, the image of his face along with the nose, and even if there are some distinguishing features on his body or on his garments, his clothing, his utensils, that's not good enough. You need to be able to actually identify him by his face. Then the Mishnah says, Ein me'idin ela acha teitzei nafsho. You can only testify that a person died once he's actually dead. Va'afilu ra'uhu meguyad v'tzala v'hachaya ocheles bo. And even if you see that he was cut open, he was severely injured, he was crucified, an animal was attacking him, things that typically lead to death, but if at the moment he is not technically dead yet, you can't testify about him. And then the Mishnah says, Ein me'idin ela ad gimel yamim. You can only testify about a person's death up to 3 days after the death, because the assumption is that after 3 days, the body begins to decompose and you can no longer identify it. However, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava omer, lo kol ha'adam, ve'lo kol ha'makom, ve'lo kol ha'shav shavin. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava basically says that, it's going to depend on the time and place, depend on the context. You can't make these broad sweeping statements that every single body has to be identified within 3 days. Sometimes for some external reasons, as we'll talk about in the Gemara, maybe it'll take longer for the body to decompose, or it'll be faster. So it's not like a one-size-fits-all according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, padachas ve'lo parts of panim ve'lo padachas, ein me'idin ad she'yuhushneim imachotem. Basically, if you can only see part of the face, but not the entire face, if you only see the forehead, but not the actual face, or the face, but not the forehead, that's not enough. You need to be able to see the entirety of the face and the nose in order to be able to testify that the person died. Amar Abai v'yitem Rav Kahana Maikra, hakaras f'nehem anesavam. The Gemara cites a pasuk from Sefer Yeshaya that says that a person's face can testify about them, which is another way of saying that you identify a person based on their facial features. Abba bar Marta, duhu Abba bar Manumi, have a maske beim Devereish Galusa Zuze. There was this Amora Abba Bar Mirta who had borrowed money from the Reish Galusa, and the money collectors in the Reish Galusa were known to be vicious, and they were always looking to get their money back as quickly as possible. So he wanted to hide his identity so they wouldn't, start attacking him. So the Gemara says, "I say Kira Davak Bivliasa Davak Baafuse Chalav Kamayu Velo Bashkerua." So what he did was he took some wax, he stuck the wax on his clothing and on his forehead, and he walked right by these guys, and they didn't recognize him. The point being that when you cover up your forehead and parts of your face, that can basically conceal your identity. Okay, then we said afal pi sheyesh simanin. We said in the Mishnah that even if there are certain distinguishing features on the person's body or his garments, that's not enough if you can't actually see the face. So the Gemara asks, lememra de simanin lav de oraisa? Does this mean to say that these distinguishing marks on a person's body are not mid oraisa? Those are not enough to testify that this is the person who died, but you need to actually see his face. Uramini mitzo kasher bechis uv arniki uv tabas osha nimtza bein kelav. Comes the Gemara and quotes a Mishnah that appears in Maseches Gittin and also in Bava Metzia that talks about the following. Let's say a man appoints a shliach to deliver a get to his wife, and the shliach loses the get, and then he finds the get tied to his ring, to a purse, to a wallet, to something like that. So or let's say just among his clothing or garments. So the Mishnah in Gittin says that's fine. Even if he finds the get after a while, in other words, he doesn't find it 2 seconds later, he finds it a couple of hours later, that's also okay. So doesn't that indicate that simanin are d'oraisa, meaning to say, I can point to something about this get, it looks familiar, I'm able to tell, by the way that it's written, by the way that it looks, that this is the very get that I was sent to deliver. So the Gemara says, no, Amar Abai lo kasha, ha Rabbi Eliezer ben Mahavai ha Rabbanan, desanya, ein me'idin al hashuma, Rabbi Eliezer ben Mahavai omer me'idin. So the Gemara presents a machlok as regarding testifying about the identity of a person based on a mole. So let's say, for example, you want to claim that the person who died was Reuven, and you say, yeah, Reuven has a mole on his, on his left cheek, and you see that there's a mole there. So the question is that considered to be a valid simon? So it's a machlokas. According to Rabbi Eliezer ben Mahavai, so he says that's a valid simon. You can testify that mole is the identifying feature of the person, but the Rabbanan disagree. So the Gemara says, my lav b'ha kamiflege demar savar simanin de oraisa umar savar simanin de Rabbanan. Seemingly, that machlokas boils down to the question of whether simanin are d'oraisa. If you think that these external identifying features like a mole is considered a valid simon mi d'oraisa, so then that's going to be like Rabbi Eliezer ben Mahavai, that's considered sufficient to identify the person by. But if you're going to think that simanin are only mi d'rabanan, then that's not going to be enough. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Amar Rava d'chuli alma simanin d'oraisa. So one version of the Gemara says that's not true, that everyone agrees that simanin are d'oraisa. So the only question is a mole considered a sufficient simon? In other words, the question is, do I say that if Reuven has a mole on his left cheek, so does that mean he's the only person on the planet who has that? Or maybe no, maybe there could be another person who looks kind of like him who also has a mole on his left cheek. It's, in other words, the question basically is a mole considered to be conclusive enough of a simon? So it's not an issue of whether simanin are d'oraisa. In this version, the Gemara thinks that everyone agrees that simanin are d'oraisa. The only question is a mole considered a valid simon? Then the Gemara says, "V'ika da'amre hacha b'shuma ha'asuya lehishtanus liachar misa kamiflegei mar sever asuya lehishtanus liachar misa mar sever ina asuya lehishtanus liachar misa." The second version of the Gemara says basically a similar idea, that everyone agrees that simanin are d'oraisa, but the question is there a fear, is there a concern that the mole might have changed its image, its appearance after the death of the person? So it could very well be that you were able to identify the mole on the person while he was alive, but it's possible that it changed afterwards. That's the second version. And then the third version, the Gemara says, "V'ika da'amri yom arava t'chule alma simanin derabanan v'hacha b'shuma simen muvak miflagei mar sever simen muvak u mar sever lav simen muvak." The third version is that everyone really agrees that simanin are only midrabanan, and the question is whether a mole is considered to be an unambiguous simen. Is this considered to be enough of an identifying feature by which I can identify the person, or maybe not? So the Gemara explains, "Ulahach lishna da'amar rava simanin de'oraisa hakatane afa pishish simanin." So, but again, according to the first two versions of the Gemara, that we assume that the simanin are d'oraisa, that those identifying features like the mole and things like that are enough to identify the person by. I don't need to also see his face. If that's true, so why did the Mishnah say on the previous Amud that even if there are simanin on the person's body or the person's clothing or the person's garments, whatever, that that's not enough, that you have to be able to actually see his face to identify him by? Why is that the case? If you think that simanin are d'oraisa, you shouldn't have to come on to that. As long as I'm able to see some kind of a simanin, why do I need to now also go and see his face? So the Gemara says, no. Gufo de aruch v'gutz, kelev de chayshin l'she'ila. The Gemara says that these particular instances that the Mishnah is referencing are these very generic types of simanin that are just not going to cut it in terms of, you know, a valid form of identification. For example, if you say the person was tall or short, okay, so, you know, half the world is tall or short. And then the Gemara says, let's say in terms of the garments, so you say, oh, the guy was wearing, I don't know, he's wearing a white shirt, he was wearing a blue shirt, whatever, but you can, but again, maybe he borrowed the shirt from somebody else. So that's not going to be conclusive enough evidence that that's the garment, that that's the person who is wearing the garment. So then the Gemara asks, so now the Gemara has another problem. If you're going to tell me that we're concerned that maybe the person borrowed the clothing from someone else, and you can't use that as a valid form of identification of the body, so the question is like this. When it comes to the halachos of Hashavas Aveda, so there's a din that if, let's say, for example, Reuven claims that he lost his donkey saddle, so now, and he comes and he gives a sim and he says, you know, there's some kind of a strap in a certain way that's, you know, that's unique, whatever. So the Gemara, so the din is that you can return, that you can return it. But the question is, if we're concerned that he might have lent it out to someone else, so then how could providing simanin on a donkey saddle be sufficient grounds to return it to him within the realm of Hashavas Aveda? To which the Gemara says, "Lo shaylei in she'uchva demaskiv le'lechamra." So the Gemara says people don't lend out donkey saddles. Why not? Because it's going to aggravate, it's going to exacerbate the wound on the donkey's back, because donkey saddles apparently were fitted to fit each particular donkey, so you couldn't lend it out. So okay, the donkey saddle is basically not a good example, because it's not something you would typically lend out, but normally in the realm of Hashavas Aveda, so once the guy gives a simin, so of course he's entitled to getting his object back. Then the Gemara says, "Mitzo kasher bechis uv arniki uv tabas heichi mahadrin." What about the other case that we mentioned in the Gemara earlier about the person who was appointed a shuliach to deliver a get, and then he lost the get, and then he finds the get tied to his ring, to his purse, to his whatever, that we said that he can assume the get is kasher? Why should that be so? If you think that simanin are not to oraisa, so then who cares that he's able to identify all these features on the get? We have to assume maybe this is a different get, maybe this is not the get that he was appointed to give. So the Gemara says, no. Tabas chayesh leziyufei kisva arniki menach she'en shevel amoshle v'ibayisem akela b'chivrei v'sumke. Basically, the case was like this. When the guy found the get tied to a ring, it was referring to his signet ring. People don't lend out their signet rings because they're afraid that people can use it to forge documents. So when he finds the get tied to his signet ring, he knows for a fact that that's his, that he never lent it out. Or let's say when the Gemara talked about finding the get tied to his purse, his wallet, whatever it is. So the Gemara says that people are superstitious and they don't lend out their wallets and purses to other people. Or when the Gemara talked about finding the get tied up in his garments, it just meant his black and white clothing. So again, things that were very generic. So again, the point here, I'm sorry. That when the Gemara says bechivrei v'sumke, it meant his white and red clothing. So in other words, those are things that people typically didn't lend out. So the bottom line is that when he finds the get tied up in these different kinds of things, they're particular items that were not normal to lend out. So that was considered a valid simit. But if he found the get lying in some kind of a generic item that could be his, but it could be someone else's, he might have borrowed it, whatever. So again, that's not going to be conclusive enough evidence that that was the same get that he was, you know, that he was appointed to deliver. Okay. Now we said about, yeah.
On what basis, maybe I missed it, do we postulate that simanim are do raisa as opposed to rabbanim?
You're saying, what's the basis for the machlokas? Like, what are they arguing about? Is that?
What are we basing?
So, I mean, again, the Gemara initially was discussing this from the vantage point of identifying a dead body. If I'm looking for a certain feature, a mole or whatever, is that enough? But again, the Gemara, as we just pointed out, you know, translates this to other areas of halacha, like most notably by Hashavas Aveda. That's really where the concept of simanin originates, comes up in Maseches Bava Metzia prominently, where it talks about whether, Right. So in other words, if you think that simanin are d'oraisa, so that's going to, you know, again, most likely be rooted in Hashavas Aveda. If you wanted to argue that it's only d'rabbanan here, so you might have to draw a distinction and say maybe Hashavas Aveda is somehow going to be different than our case. But again, that as the Gemara itself points out, Hashavas Aveda seems to be the paradigm for this discussion. Okay. Yeah.
It wasn't attached to his person.
It wasn't attached. He lost the get, and then 3 hours later, he finds it attached to something.
Yeah, but the get is made out to her.
It doesn't matter. You could have a get made out to Rachel, Yaakov, who's divorcing Rachel. There could be 500 Yaakovs and Rachels in the same town, right? Again, we spoke about this earlier in the Masechta, right? So there needs to be a very, very strong identifying feature, like it's his signet ring, and no one else in the world would have that. So that's a good enough simon. But if he finds it, I don't know, lying around in a pile of clothing that he might have lent out to someone, that's not going to be good enough. Okay, then we said va'afilu ra'uhu maguya. The Mishnah said that if you find a person being torn apart, he was really severely wounded, so he said you can't testify that he's dead until he's actually dead. So asks the Gemara lememra de maguya chayy, does that mean to say that a person who's really severely beaten and torn apart is going to live? Ure minhi, adam eno metame achateitse nafsho, afilu maguya va'afilu goseis, tamuyla metame hamichya lachayy. The Mishnah in Ahalos says that if a person is basically on the doorstep of death, in other words, they were really severely beaten, they're torn apart, they're severely beaten, or they're a goseis. A goseis means a person who's basically in the throes of death. He's, you know, 5 minutes away from dying, let's say. So the Mishnah in Allah says his body is not yet metame. He's not dead yet, but he's not going to survive that. He's you know, again, he's very, very close to death. So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar Rabbi Lokashi, Harav Shom ben Elazar Harabanan Sanya, Me'idin al Hamaguyad ve'ein Me'idin al Hatzalov. Rabbi Shom ben Elazar Omer Af al Hamaguyad ein Me'idin b'nei sheyachol lichvos ve'lichio. So it's a machlokas. The Gemara says that according to the Tanakhama, so you can testify about a person who was severely beaten. You could basically say that he's dead, even if he's not technically dead yet, because he's going to be dead in 5 minutes. However, a person who was crucified, the Gemara says, you can't testify because there's a chance that he might survive. Whereas, according to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, even a person who was severely beaten, there's a chance he could survive, because you could basically cauterize the wound. If you take some kind of a heat source, some kind of a firebrand, a flame, whatever, you could theoretically stop the bleeding, and he could technically survive. So asks the Gemara, Umi matzis lo okume ke Rav Shimon ben Elazar, v'hakatani seifa, ma'aseh ba'a Asya be'echad sheshel shuhu layam, v'lo also bi'adam el raglo, v'amru chachamim min ha'arkuvo l'mala tinase, min ha'arkuvo l'mata lo tinase. The Gemara tomorrow's daf quotes a story about a person from Asya who was lowered into the ocean, and when they brought him back up, they only found his leg. That's all they found of him. So the question was, is his wife now allowed to remarry? Can we assume that he was killed in the ocean? So the chacham made the following distinction. It depends how much of the leg was severed. So if the leg from the knee up was severed, then you can assume he's dead. You can assume that he bled out and he died. But if it was just the bottom part of the foot, so the assumption is that he could still live that way. So the Gemara says, doesn't that indicate to us, in other words, if we're going to establish just like Shimon ben Elazar, why can't we say, well, maybe there was a way to salvage the wound to stop the bleeding? So the Gemara says, no, shiny maya demarzumaka, because water exacerbates the wound. So in other words, as opposed to the previous case where we said that you could theoretically use a fire or a heat source to cauterize the wound, you don't have that option when the guy's underwater. So asks the Gemara, v'ha'amar rabba bar barchana lididi The Gemara relates that Rabba Bar Bar Chana saw this Arab merchant take his sword, and he basically killed his camel. He chopped his camel in half, and the camel died before it even got a chance to finish braying, before it got a chance to finish making its noise. So doesn't that indicate that once you chop up a person or an animal, there's no way to salvage it? You can't cauterize the wound. The animal was dead almost, 3 seconds later. So the Gemara says, no. That camel was already very weak. So that particular camel was not able to survive, but a normal camel, animal, whatever, or person could theoretically survive that. Rava Amar Besakin Milubenes to Divrei Hakol. Rava says maybe the case was where if you're using a white hot knife, sword, so again, that could theoretically cauterize the wound, that could potentially stop the bleeding. Okay. Then the Mishnah said Vahachaya Ocheles. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Oshanuel Mimakum She'enav Shoyotza Avam Mimakum She'enav Shoyotza Me'iden. When the Mishnah said that if I see a person being eaten by an animal that I cannot testify that they're dead yet, that's if the animal was eating a non-vital organ. The animal was going at its heart, its lungs, something which was vital, so then obviously you can testify that the person is dead. If you see an animal tearing apart at either the entirety or the majority of a person's trachea and or esophagus, so then you can assume that the guy, even if the animal ran away, you can assume that the person is dead. So asks the Gemara, the Mishnah begins as the following. Let's say a person was attacked by an animal, and he was basically lying on the floor frothing, he was about to die, because again, his trachea and esophagus were torn out. So the Mishnah says, if he hints to someone and he basically tells them, through an illusion, write a get for my wife, so that's valid. He can authorize writing a get. If the guy is already halachically dead, obviously a dead person cannot authorize writing a get. So the Gemara says, you're right. Chai hu v'sofo lamas. All it meant was is that, yes, technically he's alive right now, but in 5 minutes from now, he's going to be dead. So then the Gemara asks, elameata yehi gola al yado. Alama tanya, shachat shnayim arosh shnayim harei ze eino gola. So the problem is like this. If you're going to tell me that a person who rips out the trachea, esophagus, or an animal who does so is basically killing the person, even if technically he'll live for another 5 minutes. So the question then is, if let's say a person did that b'shogeg, again, how that works b'shogeg is a whole separate issue, but let's say he did it b'shogeg, so that person seemingly should have to now go to Golos. As we know that, in many cases when a person kills someone b'shogeg, they have to go to Golos. The problem is that the Braisa seems to say the exact opposite, that if a person goes ahead and accidentally slaughtered, killed, whatever it was, ripped out the majority of the trachea and the esophagus, the Gemara says explicitly that he does not go to Golos. So why not? So the Gemara says no. Ha'idmar ala amar Rav Hoshia chayshinat shema haruach bilbalatu inami shema ihu kirev misasu. So the Gemara says for one of two reasons. Either because we're afraid that the wind exacerbated the wound, or because the person, after his trachea and esophagus were ripped out, he started to convulse. So in other words, if there's some external reason why the person is dying other than the person who actually slit his throat, so then you can't necessarily put that person to Golos, even though obviously he was the main catalyst for the person dying. But if there was something external that really pushed him over the edge, so then you can't hold that person accountable in terms of Golos. So asks the Gemara, Mai Benai, what's the difference between these two approaches? Either if he slaughtered the person inside of a marble house, so there's no wind coming in, but the person convulsed, or if he slaughtered him outside, but the person didn't convulse, those would be two nafkaminas between the two approaches that the Gemara just quoted.